Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Buliwa Gavaza, and for today, we're getting into a discussion around something that we all encounter on a day-to-day basis, and that is packaging. Packaging for all manner of goods and products, you know, including consumer goods as well as food and that type of thing. And for today, we are joined by one of the big players in that space, that is Tetra Pak, and we're just going to be understanding a little bit about what their business looks like. I am at their head office in Bedford View for the day, and it is an interesting place to be. I was telling them just before we started that I get startup vibes as well, you know, which is always great in terms of when you're walking around the office, and there's lots of evidence that this is a packaging company, lots of full-scale models that I have seen, lots of different cartons, bottles, and that type of thing. So to help us understand what's going on in the business, we are joined by their managing director for Southern Africa, that is Klaus Plenge, and we're just going to be getting a little bit of an understanding around their strategy, and then also just understanding how business is going right now. Klaus, greetings to you.
Hi, how are you?
No, I live good, well, and thriving on this side. Maybe what we can do, you know, one of the things we love to do at the beginning of almost all of these sessions is to get the elevator pitch, you know, on the company. You've heard me attempting to describe what Tetra Pak is and what they do, but you know, you're the MD, so maybe you can give us a better sense of what your company does.
So, first of all, we are a family company. So it's a company that was founded in Sweden, and now we're based in Switzerland, our headquarters. So we are present in more than 150 countries. We are more or less 25,000 employees around the globe. And we have different businesses, but everything related to the food industry. So we don't supply, or we don't have solutions for other than food. So I think that's kind of embrace everything. So we can go from we call it processing side, to all the way to the final product, and we can support our customers with end-to-end solutions. So yeah, people might refer us as a packaging company, because they have seen the brand, they have seen our mottos, they have seen our carton packages, but nevertheless, there is a lot behind that sometimes is not even seen. Like, for example, ice cream production. It's done in our equipment, but it's filled in buckets, or those are pallets. I mean, it's a wrap. It's a plastic wrap that you put on your ice cream. So it's a highly complex, we have different business streams. We have processing, we have packaging, and we have services. Yeah. And the three of them convey into the food industry. Yeah. We are present in several, we are split or divided in 27 markets. And Southern Africa is one of those 27 markets, which is basically 10 countries, including South Africa. We are based in South Africa. We have 236 employees. We have one packaging factory, liquid board packaging, aseptic packaging factory in Durban, Pinetown. And then we have our main office in Johannesburg and a small office in Cape Town. But we have people across the country providing services. We can, we can supply from ingredients to a final ice cream plant or a UHT milk plant. From milk reception all the way to the packaging, to the secondary box, and beyond.
And beyond. All right. In South Africa, right, like you said, you are Am I understanding it correctly that from a hub and spoke point of view, this will be the hub for Southern Africa, and then that feeds into the other 9 countries that you're looking
at? Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
What are the other 9 countries?
So we have from left to right, or east to west, or west east.
Yeah.
And we have Namibia, then we have Botswana, then we have Zambia, Zimbabwe, Malawi, Mozambique.
Yeah.
And far on the other side, it's Mauritius. And then inside, we have South Africa, Lesotho, and Eswatini.
And what's the level? I think because this is a finance and business platform, our audience is usually looking to understand business and investment. We understand that you guys have put down, or at least committed, quite a bit of money to the production facility that you spoke about, the one in KwaZulu-Natal. I believe that's R500 million, you know, or so. What has the investment looked like in South Africa and the rest of the region?
So we have 2 factories sitting in Africa. One it's in Nairobi and the other one it's in Durban. They more or less, they are almost from the same age, let's say 1980s.
Yeah.
And we started producing gable top, which is the chilled package. So it's just a multi-layer pack, basically paper and polymers.
Yeah.
And has like the tall, it's like a house, no? It's the gable top.
Yeah.
Later on, the company started developing and launched the first aseptic packaging in the world, which, as you said, it allow us to put a milk for 6 months or 12 months with no preservatives or conservatives. And then with a higher protection, that's a multi-layer pack or liquid bulk package. So our transformation in the factory started in that sense. So we went from a chilled pack to a liquid board packaging that was aseptic, and then we started transforming the market within South Africa. I mean, you don't need a chilled distribution. You can produce it, I don't know, in Cape Town and distribute it in Botswana, for example, with no issue on the transportation. But things started shifting. The consumer started shifting. I mean, before there was no caps. It was only the straw, or you had to cut the side of the pack.
I remember that.
Yeah. And suddenly we started putting caps, and now we have post-applied, then we have also pre-applied caps, injection molding. We put a plant-based packaging. So it started changing the consumer trend and the consumer behavior, bringing more functionality to the packaging, bringing also better printing, because before it was 4 colors only. And the quality of the dots, the printing dots, were not as nice as what we have today. So there is a lot of evolution. Our factory was evolving up to the point that there was one of the things that we couldn't do, which is the PLH. It's where you put, so the PLH is like the hole you have for the straw, only that it's bigger. Looks very simple to make. There are some tricky things, but we didn't have that solution in South Africa, in our factory. Actually, it doesn't exist in Nairobi as well. But the market started transforming. I mean, today, most of the milk that we sell here in South Africa, or our customers sell, has a cap, whether it's post-apply or pre-apply, but it's a need for a cap.
Yeah, it's normal.
It's normal. It's becoming more normal. So in 2021, the board decided to make an investment of more than half a billion rands, in order to upgrade the factory and prepare it to the future, which includes new technology, some upgrades on the printing, new technology on the lamination.
Yeah.
It includes also the possibility to produce plant-based polymers in South Africa, so that we don't need to import it from somewhere else. Plus, being able to supply almost 90% of the market from made in South Africa for South Africa. So that was the big investment that we established. And also it's setting the foundation for the future developments and future new packs and new technology that might come to the factory as well. So we went from, we were producing 5 days a week. Now we're producing full days, full capacity. So it's a big shift. as well. From a technology point of view,
yeah.
Equipments and also jobs creation and all these things. So that was the decision that was taken in 2021.
Yeah.
2022, that was more or less one of the things that I think it's basics. And it's also in the values of the company, no? That we need to protect the planet, the food and the people. And the planet, it's circular economy, or as well, it's designing things that can be recyclable or 100% sustainable. So that's when we started embarking on the challenge of how to, I would say not double because it's more, how to really tackle the circular economy of liquid bottle aseptic packaging in South Africa. And that took us to a big investment. It's around 20 million that we have done per year. And we have moved the recycling rate from 8% to above 20% now. And that was until June. And we foresee that it's going to keep on growing in the long run.
Can I just a quick one there? When you talk that move from 8% to 20%, what are we talking about? 20% of the total packaging that's coming.
So whatever we deliver to our customers,
yes,
that will be packed because we deliver and then it should be packed,
no? Yeah.
and distributed in the market,
yeah,
compared to the tons that we are collecting. Not we are, but we map the tons of liquid board post-consumed packages,
yeah,
that are collected.
Yeah.
If you divide it, what you have delivered and what you have collected, then you have the recycling rate.
Okay.
And that's a good point because we don't consider the waste of the factory, because you can also add the waste of the factory. No, this is post-consumed packages.
Yeah.
So everything that it's collected, post-consumed.
Yeah.
After we deliver, everything comes back. Not comes back, it's collected and being transformed.
You have to be specific.
Yeah, because we don't use that material to build new packages.
Yeah.
What we develop the recycling value chain,
yeah,
which starts from the collection, then it goes, well, it starts from the designing point of view. 70% is carton, okay? 75% on average. 25% it's polymers and aluminium. 5% aluminium, the rest polymers. Okay? From a design point of view, it has to be designed to be recycled. Okay? The second one is once you move to the, let's say, printing and final product from the customer, then they fill it, and then it goes to the consumer. So how do we connect from post-consumed packages to the two streams, basically? Paper goes to the paper. So it has to go to a paper mill. There are two partners that we have, Impact and Gayatri.
Yeah.
They are two partners that we reestablish the connections and the partnerships. They get the paper. Why do they like that paper? Because it's a long fiber paper. Instead of importing long fibers,
yeah,
you, for example, I was driving from Durban to Johannesburg. And you see a lot of trees, beautiful landscape, by the way. But most of those trees are trees that grow very fast, but the fibers are very small. Those are not pine trees, for example. You see some pine trees, but very, very limited. Because pine trees take longer, like 7 to 8 years to grow, but the fibers is longer. So that's why when you don't have those, you need fibers to make this, for example, you need long and short fibers. Why? Because you need some structure, plus you need some flexibility. If you only put short fibers, the board probably will break. It will not hold. It will be like more like a white page, flexible, and that's it. If you put long fibers, then it will have some structure. The more long structure that you, the long fibers you put, the more structure you will get. But you cannot make also 100% because otherwise it's more like a wood. You won't be able to fold it, like to build a box.
Yeah. Maybe what I can then ask is the economics around the recycle rate, right? I have a very rudimentary understanding of how this works because of where I grew up. We used to do recycling drives. in my community. This was plastic specifically. You get a lot of where I grew up. This was back in the day when milk used to be distributed in plastic cartons and not the paper-based cartons from back in the day. You get a whole bunch of those. But after you collect a whole bunch of plastic, melting it down, and then what we would do is we would make cups.
Yeah.
Would make basic plastic cups. Yeah. Yes. But the rate of the amount of plastic you'd have to collect versus the what you get is it's quite small. And I understand the fact that there's this big push you know, to be more sustainable, to recycle and all of that stuff. But maybe you can talk to us about the actual reality of how difficult it is sometimes to achieve some of these high rates of recyclability.
So after the paper mill, basically, you remove 75%. Then you have 25%. Some people think, no, I need to take out the cup. No, you don't need to take out the cup. I need to take out the straw. No, you just need to put it inside the package. It will be recycled.
Yeah.
So that 25, then you have different business streams. For example, this, can you pass me? So the 25, thank you, can be made like this plastic wood, or we call it polyal. So this is plastic wood.
Yeah.
The colors that you see are the cups. And sometimes you can even see the straws.
Yeah.
So this is what it's being made in South Africa. It's made in South Africa.
Yeah.
So you can make, so you see the polyal there?
Yeah.
There's no paper, no? No, a little bit of paper. See, it's a little bit. I mean, it's not a lot.
Yes.
Because the paper mills, they try to extract all the paper they can. And the waste of the paper mill becomes another raw material.
Yes.
And I think that takes me to your question. First, it's not waste. It's, for me, it's raw materials. It's basically, how do you use those raw materials to transform to do something else? So, the economics behind this, for me, very simple, and having a lot of, I mean, I used to work in circular economy in Tetra Pak. I was lucky in that sense. For me, this is a business. If it has a price, it works. Because people will pick it up, will collect it, and then they will resell it to someone else. And if the paper mills they pay, they have a good price, then it will be collected. And if the polyol increases the value, and that's most of the work that we are trying to do, how to increase the value of these materials, like in roof tiles or plastic wood or some other things, then this one will push for more. They need more materials. So the price will be higher. Then the price that they will pay, it will be higher. And then it goes all the way down to the picker. Because if there is an economics, it works. If there are no economics, it's very difficult to drive. But there is one point that it's not linked to economics. And it's where everything started, which is us. The consumer, the people, families, houses. Because if they don't split it, or they don't segregate the waste, or they just litter it or throw it into the river, it will never be collected. Even if the price is $1 million, it will not be collected.
Yeah.
It's wasted.
You know, I like what you're saying, because sometimes in economics we say that the consumer pays. No, the consumer votes with their pocket.
Yeah,
right. How much do people actually care that they're getting something recycled? Because when you look at packaging trends, a lot of people use it as a point of advertising to say, you know, we are using X amount recycled material. You know, if you support our business, it means you're supporting the planet, all of this stuff. But in reality, how much do consumers and businesses actually?
I think it depends country by country.
Yeah.
And I think it's an evolution. You need to, I mean, even if there is no value, you need to connect somehow. Because if you don't facilitate the full collection. And again, it starts from the user. Huh?
Yeah.
So you go there and buy a juice in a Tetra Pak carton package.
Yeah.
You drink it from a straw.
Yeah.
Then you don't flatten it. You just don't throw it through outside your window, the car of the window from the car. Or you take it to a collection place or a recycling place, or it will be segregated. If you don't have that part, nothing will work. And I think it requires a lot of education. And it's more my learnings, and I think it's what we are doing today. It's how do we connect that consumer to what is the effect of the recycling. And that's why we have this huge campaign, schools, recycling competitions. We did a pilot last year in a human store in Port Elizabeth. And now we have, and it was very successful because kids are very open to learn about the sustainability and the recyclability and the recycling. And they started getting all the communities collecting and all these things. And since that pilot was very successful, now we have a huge one that it's more than 300 schools now that we have launched with the support from our customers. We have First Choice, we have Orange Grove, we have Rhodes Foods, RFG Foods, First Choice is Woodlands. With them, we have launched a bigger campaign targeting 300 schools. You can make a rough estimate how many students per school. More or less, put 100 if you want. It's a lot of people that we are influencing. And I think that's where there is no economics. It's basically, the consumption is there, but it's just, guys, don't throw it, put it there because it will be transformed and it creates more jobs.
Yeah.
I think that connection will be really important. Then for the future, I mean, consumers start prevailing and you see more and more, this is recycled, can be recycled. Plant-based products. For example, our caps are made of plant-based sugarcane, pea, made of sugarcane. So it's a pea made of sugarcane, not a fossil plant cap. Why would you put that into a package? I mean, you can also remove it and not put it, or things like that. But it depends consumer by consumer. It depends, and it's a long journey. Huh? But it all starts with education. All starts with the companies like Tetra Pak leading the way, pushing the limits of the recycling, trying to partnerships, because alone you will not transform the world. You need partners. You need, at some point, you need also the public, I mean, the state also supporting those. It's a private public project that can transform the business. And at the end, because people think, this is waste, but there's a job. All these speakers, for them, that's a job. Then you have the paper mills that also develop jobs. And then you have the other ones. And if you buy plastic wood instead of, I don't know, not having a house and you can afford to have a plastic, this plastic wood to some furniture, you are also transforming the life of someone else. And our ambition is to develop, to help develop some technology so that we can add more value to the polyol products so that then we can export.
All right. I want to switch a little bit. We've spoken quite a bit about the packaging itself. We've spoken about recycling, spoken about the evolution of Tetra Pak in the region, your investment. And, you know, you also told us the story of what led to the investment decision, or, you know, what you're trying to do with your packaging. Three things, you know, being cognizant of the fact that, you know, your time is very important. The first one is for an ordinary consumer going about their life, right? What brands, what are the normal consumer brands that a person is encountering on a day-to-day basis that are actually sitting inside of Tetra Pak packaging?
So first one that easily comes into my mind is the milk. most of the milk is produced in Tetra Pak packages. Yeah. And if not, you can check our motto that is next to the package that says protects what's good, and it's Tetra Pak. So most of the milk, the UHT market, it's in a carton sitting in a Tetra Pak box or container, milk container. The second one, at a smaller scale, are the juices, juice and nectar. Those are the main two easy way, let's say, to find out. Then we have some wine as well. And then we have cream and other type of products. No?
But milk is probably
big. Milk is one of the big ones. And juices as well. But it's different because milk is more 1 liter.
Yeah.
And juices is more small packs, 200 ml.
Yeah. All right. And then the other one that I'm very curious about is when it comes to packaging in the country, there's a lot of different names that we hear about. You spoke about Impact earlier on. There's the likes of Impact. I think there's likes of Novus, Caxton, you know, all of these different companies that are out there. What does the competitive landscape look like in South Africa for what you guys are doing?
So the competitive landscape, how we see it, it's anything that can be packed. So for example, in our system, we cannot pack carbonated soft drinks. It's impossible because the gas will inflate the package.
Yeah.
So we cannot pack beer, for example.
Yeah.
So we have several solutions. I mean, you can pack, you want to put a juice, you can put it in a liquid bottle, aseptic packaging. You can put it in a liquid bottle packaging. So it's chilled. You can put it in a PE. You can put it in an HDPE. So then you have different cans. You have aluminium cans. Plastic bags, if you want, aseptic plastic. So it's infinite. I mean, it depends the consumer. It depends what you want to drive. It depends your business. It depends the quality of the product you're going to deliver. Because our liquid bulk packages has a, I would say, the backbone of the package. The pack, it's the aluminium. That's a barrier that we use to protect from light and from light to degrading the vitamins, for example, or the nutritional facts. By having aseptic means no conservatives or preservatives, that as I mentioned. So if you have a product that has a lot of, protein, vitamins and all these things, you need protection. And the best protection, it's the carton package. If you, then you don't need protection. Maybe let's go for water. Maybe for still water, it's more a sustainability fact than just protection, because water is water and it doesn't degrade by the light. Maybe oxygen interferes a little bit, but so you can have different solutions for water. And that's what we have today. You have transparent packaging for water most of the time. But now we are growing a lot with water because of the sustainability profile of the package. Because as if you put 70% it's carton, if you put then some of the barriers to sugarcane plastics or plant-based, as we call it, plant-based, then you start having like almost 80% sustainable packaging. And then if it can be recyclable and the recycling chain exists, then it's a plus. Then it's less CO2 as well, because this paper doesn't produce CO2. It captures CO2. And plant-based also captures CO2. So that's another effect. So if you compare one system versus another system, you can compare it by CO2 emissions, by recycling chain, by sustainable content. So it depends how you see it, and it depends also on the consumer as well. We cannot put powder, for example. If you would like to put built on powder, no, probably you will use something else. If you have this formula, no, kids formula, no, in those comes in big cans, no. But if you have a liquid formula, and actually we do have it here, it's produced in South Africa for kids, the same, but it's only liquid, ready to drink, then it will be in this bag.
All right. The last thing we wanted to get, maybe it helps us to bring everything that you've spoken about with us today together, is when you have your clients, right, that you are packaging on behalf of and all of that, who's leading the decision on the type of packaging and what goes into packaging? Is it one of your customers? Maybe one of the milk guys who says, this is the type of packaging that we want. These are the protections that we need. Or does Tetra Pak create a carton and say, hi, you know, X brand, our packaging can do this for your milk and make sure that it stays on the shelf for 6 months, a year, or whatever it is?
So first of all, we don't pack products. Yeah. I have to, yeah. We sell the equipment to produce. It cannot be aseptic if you don't make it aseptic, by the way. So the UHT technology, or if you want to put it, the kitchen before the filling, it's really important, because the filling doesn't clean the product. The cleaning comes here. The mixing, the cleaning, the preparation comes before the filling. So that's one. I think that's important to mention. Then how it works. So we are, I would say Tetra Pak is like a B2B and B2C company. We act more like B2B because we work with industries, but we have a lot of expertise in the B2C. So we can help a customer, for example, you come to me and say, look, you, I have a business potential of, I don't know, what would you like to sell? I would like to sell a ready-to-drink high-protein, high-fiber milk. Let's put it like this. But I have challenges. So we have a strong team of marketing. Actually, it's a big team. And this global support where we can map, okay, in the world, which one, where do we have something similar? Can we learn something from them and bring it to South Africa? We can go from the idea to the final product. When I mean final, means packed. Huh? In our pilot plants in Europe or in Asia or in South America or in North America, we can pack those ideas. We can pack those ideas and say, this is the final product. These are the ingredients. These are the formulation. This is that, 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 that. And maybe if you want to co-pack, you can go to this guy, or you want to produce yourself, you might need to invest on this equipment. So we can go that far from scratch. Huh? We can go also from, look, I have this flavored milk, low fat. What else can I do? Because I need to grow. There are consumer trends that are telling that kids, they would like a 200 ml, but I only have a 250 or 1 liter. I think there's a lot about nutritional facts and protein, low sugar content. So then we help the brand to extend and develop new products by using our technology to tackle that customer needs that you are seeing. You can also come and say, look, I have the filling. Can I pack wine? Because some customer approached me. Can I do co-packing of wine? Or can I pack broth or stock? So we help our customers in that sense as well. But we have also ideas. We can come up with some ideas. And actually, that's the part that I enjoy a lot, where you see business opportunities because you have market trends in South Africa, market information. We have global trends. We have a lot of information and trends that we are chasing around the globe. So we are either developing new products based on those consumer needs or customer needs. But we can also say, oh, look, they just launched a smart campaign in Mexico. They put a QR code in each pack, and it's not a static code, it's a dynamic code, and how do we do it? And then we say, okay, I like this idea. I've seen the same need in South Africa. There is one customer that is talking to, let's say, young people that are very connected with social media, that they are influencers, and maybe it will make sense. Let's develop something for some concept. Then we start approaching customers that have this opportunity. And maybe they are not seeing it. Most of the time they are not seeing it. So we come and say, look, what do you think? This is why. We see a consumer trends. This is global. This is local. You can do it. This is your brand. We can do it. Blah, 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 blah. Would you like to join? Would you like to do something? And then we start doing it.
All right. I think on that particular point, that's how we wrap up today's discussion. It has been a really great one just hearing from Klaus, the different ways in which Tetra Pak is, attacking their business and the market in this particular region, giving us some insight into Tetra Pak and, their global business, but also bringing it down to Southern Africa, where they have operations after all for about 10 countries, with South Africa being a hub through which that they're doing a lot of that investment, $500 million that's recently been invested in this country. And he was giving us some insight into the rationale around that particular investment, the old types of packaging that they used to do, some of the requirements that they were looking for, and how that then informed to say, this upgrade, this is the type of investment that we need. Also giving us some insight, we spoke quite a bit about the world of recycling. The words that he kept using is circular economy. How do we make sure that you get a product from scratch into the shops, but back around again. And he said that it's not necessarily about getting it back again, but rather transforming it, back into people's lives. Also giving us some insight into the competitor landscape and how they think about, what they can do versus what the other players in the market can do. And also at the same time, I think at the end, it was great understanding, how the actual conception actually happens. A lot of it is happening on the Tetra Pak side, some of it is happening on the customer side, but how do you bring all of the different knowledge and insights together? So that's been it. We were in conversation with Klaus Plenge. He is the managing director for Southern Africa over at Tetra Pak. Klaus, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.